If you want an in-state natural gas pipeline, your candidate for governor is Bill Walker. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. It's more jobs, but is it the best investment to build an LNG plant that would have to compete internationally? Our number, statewide and toll-free, is 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. Bill Walker, candidate for governor, is our guest on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
No, you've not stepped into a time warp. It is Thursday, and this is Talk of Alaska. What is happening is in the days leading up to our important primary election, there are a number of choices for Alaska's voters, particularly voters, independents, and Republicans. And the number of candidates for statewide office is so large that we would just never get to all of them if we didn't expand Talk of Alaska to 2 days a week. So that's what we've done, and we have issued invitations to everybody, and they're just basically coming in one by one so you can get to know the candidates better for statewide office. In the case of governor, there are very clear-cut, the Republican nomination for governor, there's three very different positions on the gas line among the three candidates. It's very rare that you see such a classic division between the candidates, as we do see on this issue. And I think it would be fair to say, but I'll ask you, Bill Walker, is Gasline your main issue?
Actually not. My main issue is the future of the state and jobs and economy. And one of the planks, a significant plank of that is for economic energy and jobs is a gas line. But it's not, it's part of a bigger picture, but a very necessary part of the bigger picture.
Well, all right. Yeah, I was trying to get a little background from you, and you started in and just totally captivated me because you're a lifelong Alaskan, right?
I am.
Fairbanks, but, many years in Valdez, including the earthquake.
Yes, it was 30 years in Valdez.
So what is you're an attorney, yes?
I am.
And you were the counsel for the Port Authority?
I was. I am. Counsel for Port Authority, that's correct, general counsel.
And you went to law school where?
My wife and I went to law school together. We went to the University of Puget Sound in Tacoma, UPS. And so we had we left Valdez. I was mayor and, at that time. I left. I was about 27, 28. Off we went to law school, and that was actually kind of an enjoyable experience. We spent that time together, and it was. I'm glad we did it. At the time, I was a little bit, I was a pretty happy carpenter. I grew up swinging hammers for a living, and enjoyed it immensely. And I still do. I tend to use a nail gun a little bit more now than the actual framing hammer. My elbows are such that it doesn't swing quite the way it used to. But that's my background.
So you're despite whatever the three-piece suit mentality one might expect of an attorney, you'll strap on tools. You'll wear a hard hat. And I understand that you, when you go in a parade, you insist on riding a piece of heavy equipment rather than a vehicle.
I do, and that's just my people that know me well know that I'm much more comfortable with a tool belt on framing a house or framing a building than I am necessarily in a three-piece suit. That's just sort of my background. My passion is I love to build things. I'm a builder by. I think once you build things, I don't care how many degrees you get, you always will be a builder, and I am a builder. And I worked on taps as a journeyman carpenter, as a laborer, and as a teamster out of Sheep Creek Camp in Valdez, of course. And before that, I built houses for my dad when I was growing up, and actually the story is that working for my dad for free building houses saved my life on the day of the earthquake. I was hadn't been for him. I was headed down to the dock. A ship was in. And in Valdez in '64, when you're 12 years old, when there's no radio, there's no TV, You want to, and the ship is in, you go, you're just, the gravitational pull is just too much. And so you go down there and you line up and they'll throw fruit, fresh fruit to you and whatnot and off the ship from the gallery. And I was headed down there, walking down to the dock, and my dad comes along and says, we're going out to get some gravel, make some sand. And in 64, we just poured a foundation the day before and by hand. And he said, we're going to go make some sand. Would you go to the river and you shovel the sand out and put it on a screed and shake it, and then you have sand.
By hand.
Yeah. So,
whoa.
So we're out there. So I said, well, actually, I was headed to the dock, and my dad wasn't to ask two or three times kind of guy. And so I jumped in the vehicle with my brother and my dad, and off we went. And we were out there shoveling the, making the sand, and when the earthquake started. And there was no question, if he had not stopped by and picked me up and taken me out, I would have made it to the dock. And so at that point, he owned me. At that point, he said, well, my strong work ethic is what kept you here. And because it was Good Friday, and it was like, you know, I shouldn't be working on Good Friday. As I'm 12, I should be down at the dock with my buddies having snowball fights and doing what you do in Valdez. So anyway, that was a...
I guess, you know, for those who don't know, we probably should say there is no... That Valdez doesn't exist anymore. It was all wiped out.
Well, the location. We moved 5 miles. And so we went from the house building business to house moving.
So what happened to that boat and then dock and everything?
Well, the dock went down immediately, and everybody on the dock perished. 34 people perished. Nobody got off the dock. And the boat actually stayed around, the China. It stayed around for a couple of days. A friend of mine actually saw looking down the street, actually saw the propeller of the ship up in the air. It was that high, just looking down the street. So it stayed around for a couple of days, acted as a communication hospital ship. And you know, when it left, it never came back again. Alaska Steamship never brought it back. And it wasn't because the China started the earthquake, but just the memories it would bring with it. They just made a decision, we'll never bring the China back to Valdez, and they didn't. So,
wow. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, and Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org. And Bill Walker isn't really here to talk about the history of the earthquake, but my heavens, I just had to get that story out of you. That is just... That's a mind-blowing story. We did a show on the earthquake, and would have loved to have that story.
Oh, well.
It was about earthquake preparedness, you know.
Well, I actually thought my dad started the earthquake, because as we were shoveling the sand on the gravel on this screed, my dad was doing the shoveling, my brother and I were supposed to shake this screed and sand it to fall out. He was way ahead of us, and we were not shaking it like we were supposed to. He said, well, let me show you how to shake that screed. He's about 6'4". He grabbed that, dropped a shovel, grabbed that screen, and started to shake it. And that's when the earthquake started.
I
thought for a nanosecond, my gosh, what, you know, he's really upset because he's shaking the whole earth. And so then he said, drop the tools and run, because we're in the middle of a river, and which broke up immediately. He said, drop the tools and run and leave the tools. Words I'd never heard him ever use, leave the tools. We didn't have that many tools. And leave the tools and run for the car, which we did. But anyway, it was quite an event.
Yeah. So what prompts you to decide to run for Alaska, governor?
You know, I don't like knowing what I know and not doing anything about it is really what it comes down to. You know, I'm not a professional politician. I'm a business person. I'm a better business person than I have a passion for Alaska. I have a knowledge of Alaska's, we're a resource state. I have a vision of what we can be based on what I've done over the years, and I don't like knowing the fact that we're running out of oil at a rate of about 6% per year, and the oil pipeline is 2/3 empty. And what are we doing to get on to renewable resources? We're not doing anything. I mean, we need to get on to renewable resources. We should have gotten on to renewable resources years ago. We shouldn't be, you know, so much of our state is tied to the high price of energy and diesel. Rural Alaska is absolutely tied to diesel and paying the incredibly high prices for that. We need to get off of diesel onto renewable energy. Some places that where natural gas can be compressed and put on the river and do it like they do in Norway and Scandinavian countries and move that around. We need to get down. The cost of energy has got to come down so we can actually have some value-added opportunities in Alaska and in rural Alaska to be able to have the jobs. And if you know, I think Bethel has their cost of power is 36 cents per kilowatt hour. Wow. How do you do value added at 36 cents per kilowatt hour? So we've got to bring down the cost of energy, but do it in such a way it isn't just necessarily putting money out there. It's creating the infrastructure so we have the renewable. So we're using our we're the most energy-rich state in the nation. We should have the lowest-cost energy in the nation. We have the highest-cost energy. So,
well, so far, I mean, I don't think there's anybody running that would disagree with anything you said. It's more a question of getting there.
Right.
And what? So, are you know, you're with the Port Authority. That's one way of generating the investment income through selling bonds, I suppose. You know, where is the money going to come from?
Well, you know, my run doesn't have anything to do with the Port Authority. In fact, everything I'm talking about would be done outside of the Port Authority. So it isn't I've been at this for a long time. And as far as, you know, when I was 27 or 8, when I was Mayor Valdez, well, actually just before that, I was involved with a group that went to California to sit down with Governor Brown to talk about LNG out of Alaska down to the lower 48. So I've been at it for a while, and Governor Hickel was a big influence in my life, and I spent a lot of time with him. A couple of years ago, we went to Beijing together, and I was able to sort of witness him and work with him in his incredible ability to be a statesman, and so that was enjoyable. I guess, I mean, the difference with me is I've seen all these studies, and studies, and I participate in some of the studies, quite honestly, as far as I've read them, I've sort of critiqued them, etc. But it's time we stop studying. I guess that's the difference, is that I'm not out proposing another study. In fact, what I've said is under my administration, there'll be no more gas line studies. We have studied it to death. There's I think a good portion of Southeast Timber has gone to gas line studies, quite honestly, because they're just incredible amount of studies. It's time to stop studying and time to start putting the project together. And when I say put the project together, I've spent time in the boardrooms of Tokyo Gas, Tokyo Electric. I met with CoGas. I've been to the market. I've been to the slope. I've spent nearly an entire summer in Houston meeting with the various companies that would be involved in a project like that. The only piece we're lacking, I mean, the market is there. The gas is there. We may inject more gas on the slope than any place in the world. The only thing we're lacking is a piece of pipe. And as some have said, my gosh, we've got our entire state wrapped around the axle over a piece of pipe. It's a piece of infrastructure. It was brought to my attention some years ago by some energy companies that do business around the world. They said, why doesn't Alaska do what they do with other places in the world? Other host governments step up and be part of the solution rather than sit back hoping somebody does something. We seem to throw carrots at them for a while. Governor Parnell recently pushed $20 billion across the table to them to say, we'll incentivize the open season if you'll just ship gas to Canada. I'm done incentivizing. That's silly. It's time we start. I mean, that cost of that veto of 305 equates the cost of a pipeline. So I want to get, you know, some people say, well, the disadvantage of Alaska is on a gas line is we got that long pipeline from Puto Bay to Valdez to Tidewater. And I say, thank heavens we have that. I would love the idea of crossing the Yukon River and making, you know, compressed natural gas, put it on barges, move it up and down to about 40 different communities and villages that would have, you know, clean, burning, cheap natural gas rather than high-priced diesel. So I see that as an advantage. Fairbanks, my goodness. Cost of energy in Fairbanks, and the way I describe it is this: take the cost of energy in Anchorage, whatever anybody pays, multiply it times 3, and deduct 40 degrees in temperature, and that's pretty much Fairbanks. It's just horrific what they pay in energy cost in Fairbanks. So,
and I guess you're saying an 800-mile piece of pipe is bound to be a lot cheaper than a 2,000-mile piece of pipe.
Yeah, it is. And there's no market in the lower 48. That market's completely gone as a result of shale gas. And so I've never been a fan of putting it into Canada anyway. I don't dislike Canada at all. I think they've got, you know, wonderful country, wonderful neighboring country. But I just don't want our jobs and our I don't want them to, the jobs to flow there. They should stay in Alaska. So I'm all about the all Alaska route.
We're talking to Bill Walker. He is running for governor. He is a Republican, and I think you're getting some idea of where he stands. You ready for some phone calls from Alaskans?
You bet. Of course I am.
All right. It's Talk of Alaska statewide. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And the email is talk@aprn.org. We got one already stacked up there. But let's go to Tom, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Bill Walker, Tom.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Bill.
Morning, Tom.
I uncovered a policy by the Coast Guard that declares all of Alaska a remote area. and allows almost 1,000 tank vessels and non-tank vessels to escape compliance with OPA 90. As governor, would you sue the Coast Guard to obtain equal protection under OPA 90 for all of Alaska's citizens?
Well, Tom, I would certainly, I know your knowledge in that area, and I have a lot of respect for it. So I would certainly want to look closer, and if there's an area, if there's a loophole or there's a problem within that some vessels are outside of OPA 90 that should be in, you bet I would be aggressive on that. You know my background on the issue with Exxon Valdez oil spill, and so I would certainly look very closely at if someone is escaping that should be in that, I would certainly be aggressive on that.
Yeah, the RCAC has all of those documents that I obtained, so I would hope you take a look at it and make it part of your public policy here on having Alaskans be treated as citizens equally to the rest of the lower 48.
I absolutely agree.
All right, Tom. Hey, thanks a lot for your call. Go to Eric now, joins the program from Anchorage. Eric, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Bill Walker.
Yes, I was calling about the Office of Child, actually the Child Support Division. Mm-hmm. They actually are taking licenses from parents who don't pay their child support. I was wondering if that's still equally viable law. I think what happens is that the state demands money, but it's obstructing the recovery effort in. Actually, a lot of laws are basically laws and taxes are obstructing the recovery effort. I believe that's one of them. When you have $1,000 due on your child support and they take your license away, that eliminates ways of getting around to pay that child support. What would you do?
Are you talking about driver license taken away?
Yes.
I'm not sure what that would accomplish other than making it very difficult for somebody to get to work to earn a living to pay the bill. So I'm surprised to hear that, Eric, and I would certainly look into that. That doesn't sound like anything I would support because I think people need to be. My whole issue is getting, you know, jobs and financial opportunities for people to have good paying jobs. So not having a driver's license makes it more difficult to be able to go to work every day. So doesn't sound like anything I'd be in support of.
Eric, I want to thank you for your call.
Thanks.
All right. Yeah, well, you know, that kind of brings up something I did want to ask you about in the family values and so forth area, which is we've got the parental notification initiative. You ready to say how you stand on that?
Sure. I am in favor of the, I'm a yes vote on the parental notification. I am. Yeah.
Okay. Bill Walker is our guest. He is a Republican candidate for governor of Alaska.
And let me chat just a little bit about education, if I could.
Absolutely.
One of the concerns I've had is our high dropout rate in our school system in Alaska. Clearly, the system is broken, and I really believe that. And I've seen what is working, what's not working. But the problem we have is we sort of have one size fits all. We assume everybody's going to go on to college from high school, and we sort of design our curriculum accordingly. I'm a big believer that we should have more vocational opportunities within our mainstream system. They have a great school in Wasilla. I know they have them elsewhere as well. We have the King Career Center here in Anchorage, which is very good, but what they've done in Wasilla with a Votech High School is that you have to apply to get in, you have to be interviewed to get in. It's 400 students, but when you walk into that school, one wing says construction, another wing says hospitality, another one says medical, and you go in those classrooms. It's like being in a community college because they're all learning a trade and they can go right on from that school right on to college. They'll get their basic requirements for college there as well, but it just has a different feel to it because they're in the culinary program or they'll come out and be an apprentice electrician or they'll be, you know, they'll come out with a skill and a trade and employable, and not only that, they come out with a bit of a passion for what they've been doing in school. And I think we need to have more of that in Alaska. Kodiak has done a very good job of that, incorporating their fishing interest in their community, in their high school curriculum. So I think we need to, I mean, I believe that's the direction we need to be going, is to make sure that there's a reason to, for young people to stay in school, and also when they come out that there's an opportunity for them to continue on and get a good job.
Well, now, think about on the Yukon-Kuskokwim. I know you're on your way out there. You're going to be in Bethel, what, tomorrow?
No, I think next week, next Wednesday, I believe.
Well, you know, there you have very little cash economy at all. You have subsistence economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have young people that basically that there's really not many jobs in the community.
Well,
they're probably going to have to leave. And the question is, how do they acquire what they're going to need in a local school? And how can it be rooted in the subsistence value so it is actually culturally relevant?
Right. Well, you know, I still believe, I know there's job opportunities there. I mean, I know that they, and that's one of the reasons I'm going there. I'm anxious to learn. I've met with the economic development director for that region and learned a great deal already before the trip. You know, there's value-added opportunities with fish. A lot of their fish gets shipped over, as I understand it, into the Cook Inlet area for processing, and part of that is because the cost of energy is so high. And I'd love to see those processing jobs stay in that region. And you know.
Oh yeah, it's trying to have any processing at all there is very much. He says the processor says pretty much an exercise in hope.
Yeah, it is, and I applaud those that are you know attempting to create jobs in that area. And I just think that's what just you know we have the single denominator is low cost energy. And you get low-cost energy, suddenly we're making things in Alaska. We're making cement north of Fairbanks. We have all the limestone we need to make cement. We need to be making – my whole belief is Alaska should be using our natural resources to make products, not just – we tend to ship our products out sort of in the raw, if you will, and we return them to Alaska as a finished product. So we basically pay the freight twice, pay the freight going out, pay it coming back, and the value added is done somewhat out of Alaska. So that's our fault. That's our fault. We need to take control of this to get the energy cost down.
Well, I'm sure you'll hear about Donlin Creek while you're there as
sure.
well. You got any ideas on how to power that mine?
Absolutely. Natural gas. Huh. No, it's absolutely the way to power that mine is with natural gas. And you know, I guess, I mean, I look around the world at you know, the most iron ore smelting done in the world is in Iceland. It's kind of somewhat counterintuitive because their cost of energy is so low. So when you have low-cost energy, there's so many things that we can do we couldn't otherwise do. That's the real opportunity in this state. Here we are, a resource-rich state, an energy-rich state. We just need to combine the two so that we create jobs out of that.
Are you one of those people that wants to get a railroad all the way up to Kotzebue, maybe Ambler?
You know, I'm all about infrastructure, Steve. I think that's one of the roles of government is to create the infrastructure that causes commerce to happen. When Red Dog Mine was developed, they needed a road. The state built them a toll road, and it's the only toll road, I think, in Alaska. But, you know, it's to provide the infrastructure for the economy to work. And we haven't built a major road in Alaska since 1972, the Parks Highway. We've just stopped doing infrastructure projects. We've been spending a lot of money, but
we built a grain elevator in the Valdez, I remember.
Yeah, they did that with their own tax dollars after I left to go to law school. And so I was gone during that period of time. But, you know, there have been efforts in the past that they looked at that elsewhere in the state. But I guess the difference is on the gas line is this is more like the gas line is more like the toll road at Red Dog Mine. There's customers on both ends before you move the first shovel full of dirt. You have long-term contracts. It's paid for, financed by the world market. You know, so it's not a we get the benefit of it. We get to draw gas off in Alaska on its way to Tokyo, but because it's going to Tokyo, we can draw it off at a fraction of what would be if we just brought it to us. If we just brought it to us, the recent study showed that the bullet line would virtually double the cost of energy in this area, and I don't think that's the goal, is to double the cost. I think the goal is to cut it down significantly. So.
Well, we'll see what Ralph Samuel says about that on Tuesday.
Okay.
The one thing that's brought up about the LNG in Valdez is it could support a petrochemical industry.
It could. It's really the value added that's exciting, I think, along the route or even over in this area. The example I use, I mean, Agrium facility, that was 350 jobs in Nikiski, 350 direct jobs, $80,000 a year plus, and another 150 of service jobs. So roughly 500 jobs. And that was a value-added opportunity that's now gone away because the volume of gas has dropped significantly. There's you could be making plastic feedstock. There's a number of things that could be manufactured in Alaska out of the gas liquid. So that's why I'm not in favor of I want a project that takes us to where I think we can be and should be as a growing economy.
Bill Walker is our guest. He's running for governor. He's a Republican. And Jane is on the line from Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Bill Walker. I'm sorry, Jake.
Oh, hey.
Hi, Jake. I'm sorry I called you Jane.
No worries. I'll get over it pretty fast.
All right,
Bill. I'm wondering what sort of way, how you're going to attract those industry jobs to Alaska, like through the processing jobs like oil refining or not fish processing, but timber refining and things. Because I know we collect those resources now, and then they're shipped down south, and then they use the labor there. So I'm wondering how you could attract those industries here.
Well, I think that's a great question, and that's really what I'm talking about. And the way you attract the jobs here is you make it economic here for them to do business here, and make it so that it's affordable for them to do business. If they're trying to manufacture something here and paying the highest cost energy in the nation, that is the first strike against us. So my belief is that we get the cost of energy down through, I mean, hydro, Southeast has had tremendous successes in hydro. I think we should use more of those successes elsewhere in the state, but also make the cost of doing business in Alaska. You know, remove some of the hurdles that are there now, some of the regulatory hurdles perhaps, so that it is more cost effective to do the value added in Alaska. Create, you know, incentives is one way of looking at it. In incentives, you're basically throwing money at it to try to incentivize it in some way. And I'm not a big fan of that necessarily. I'm saying let's make the cost of doing business in Alaska significantly lower than it is now. So they'll say, you know, it makes more sense for us to do that in Alaska. And, you know, some places have a disincentive that you can't remove the resources without having a value added, opportunity in the state. And I haven't looked much at that. I'm not a big believer in more government regulation to what you can't do, but let's create a financial economic environment that's very, very enticing to do the value added.
So, Jake, I guess...
Well, that's all well and good, Bill, but I'm just wondering, isn't the primary way to do that to cut the cost of labor? Wouldn't you be paying people less to do the same thing, to entice them to come to Alaska?
Well, not necessarily. When I look at the cost of labor in Alaska versus elsewhere, and look at the cost of energy in Alaska versus elsewhere, the one that's a very significant difference is the cost of energy is two or three or four times what it is anyplace else. So I'm all about let's start with the cost of energy and get that cut as quickly as possible.
Okay. I think I see what you're saying there, though.
All right, Jake.
Very good. Thank you, Jake. Thanks a lot.
Jake, I appreciate your question from Juneau. It's Talk of Alaska, and Bill Walker is our guest. He's running for governor as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
And it's Talk of Alaska with Bill Walker. It's a Thursday edition of Talk of Alaska. Between now and the primary election, we'll be slopping over from Tuesdays to Thursdays from time to time in order to accommodate the large number of candidates who are vying for statewide office. And we want to give them, want to give our listeners a chance to get to know who these people are. And in today's case, it's Bill Walker. And have you ever run for anything? You said you were a mayor in Valdez. Any other public office?
No, I was on city council there and other positions. But no, after that, I stayed in the private sector, and we raised our family. My wife of 33 years, Don, and I have four children. And now I used to say one and soon to be two grandchildren, but our second grandchild was arrived 2 days ago.
All right. Congratulations.
So our first grandson. So, Porter Martin Hobson is 2 days old now. So, we've just been in the private sector. We've been in various tourism businesses, construction. We had a hotel, various things in Valdez, and we still have a tourism business in Valdez. So I've been pretty much a private sector person, very focused on energy issues, very focused on oil pipeline issues, and I'm just horrified that we're not doing anything to put another barrel of oil in the oil pipeline, because the oil, the gas really doesn't replace the loss of oil income. They're not quite the same. But the best thing to get more oil in the pipeline is to have a gas line, and the reason for that is on the North Slope. If you explore for oil and you find gas today, it's bad news. You have to cap it or re-inject it and pay to re-inject it. But if we have a gas line, it's going to take half the risk away, and hopefully it'll bring 30 or 40 new companies to Alaska.
Some of the things that you say put me in mind, obviously, of Wally Hickel, but also of Frank Murkowski, who wanted to be a kind of a CEO type of governor, and brought in people who had industry backgrounds, mostly as his cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of ways, the final judgment of Alaskans was that it didn't really work, that it didn't work real well, that, the big one, of course, was on the gas line negotiations with the industry. And the general feeling was that he had given away too much, basically.
Right.
Wanted to do whatever the industry wanted. But also, he kind of ran into a lot of opposition when he tried to streamline permitting by wiping out the coastal zone management, the local coastal zone management, basically removing their authority and putting it into the DNR. The legislature is looking like now it's going to go back and reinstate some of that CZM. Where would you stand on that if you were governor?
Well, I come from local government. That's my background, has been local government, and I have been as a municipal attorney. And I'm a big believer that the stakeholders should be involved. And I think that if they don't have that, we're going to end up with all we have, a bunch of lawsuits. And so I'm a big supporter of the local governments, the local communities being able to be involved in the process in a meaningful way, not just in a, you've got 10 days to respond. I mean, actually engage.
You go ahead and clear your throat, and I'll talk about you a little bit here. Bill,
let me just carry on. Okay. One example is the... after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, there's a group that was formed, the Prince William Sound Regional Citizen Advisory Council, and it brought together the stakeholders, the impacted communities in Cook Inlet, Kodiak, Cordova, Whittier, Valdez, Soldovia, Kenai, and also the organizations that are impacted, the various business organizations and environmental groups, and put them all together as a stakeholder group. And it was able to sit down with the industry, and it was sort of science to science rather than lawyer to lawyer. And I think it was a great example of how things should be done. So again, I'm a big believer in having the local impacted parties, if you will, stakeholders being involved in the process.
Well, that brings up the Pebble Mine. You got a position on it?
I do. I'm a very strong resource development person. Pebble Mine is one that has all my antennas up, just because of the size of it, whatnot. I am a believer in the process. I want the process to go through. I want to make sure that the process that we have is the appropriate process for something of that magnitude. What I'm not in favor of is if we're going to You know, if we are jeopardizing a renewable resource, our fish, with a non-renewable resource, then I'm going to always err on the side of protecting the renewable resource, protecting the fish. I don't know that at this point. Much of what's available now is available through the media on who has the best TV ads, and that's not the way to do that. So I plan to sit down with them on both groups and understand what their concerns are. But I also want to make sure the process goes through the process of far enough along so we know what the result's going to be. And so that's what I'm concerned about, is if we actually stop something before the process has begun, I'm not sure what kind of a message we send to other potential development for other mines, such as the Donlin and other mines. So let's get some more information. Let's let the process work a bit. And at least, I'm not even sure they've even filed the application, as far as I know. So let's see what the application is going to look like, see what the extraction method is going to be. And but keep our eyes wide open on this. From my understanding of it, it's a huge, huge mine.
There is this is not strictly a primary issue, but I think you might. It certainly ties in with what you're talking about, mining. You said, I want to sit down with them. I'm going to sit down with them. I'm going to find out what they really want to do here. Ethan Berkowitz is now saying we need to change the oil tax structure. He's Democrat running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to roll up his sleeves and negotiate with the companies to get royalty deals separately with each company. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I'm not wedded to it initially. Excuse me. My concern is that we receive revenue, the state does, five different ways off of a particular field. To sit down and negotiate, part of the concern I have is the people on the other side of the table have all the information. That's one of the problems we have in the state is that there's a lack of information. Things are kept from the public that should not be kept from the public. And we have a lot of statutory protection of those, and so a lot of times we don't have the information. So a concern to me would be when negotiating with somebody that on the other side of the table has all the information, and we sit on our side with limited information. So that's a concern for me in that regard. So I'm not. It doesn't strike me initially as the way to go to throw out everything we have in place now. Can there be improvements? Absolutely. I applaud those that are looking at ways of improving. I think that's good. If there's improvements, we should make those. But to wholesale eliminate the five different ways now and come back with one that we're betting everything on our successful negotiation or that one particular issue, I'm not sure that's the direction to go.
It's Bill Walker. He's running for governor as a Republican. The telephone number to talk with Bill Walker is 1-800-478-8255 statewide. 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. And our email is talk@aprn.org. And by email, I've got one from Phil in Kodiak, who says, I think the Alaska Railroad should take over the gas line project as they have the grandfather rights to the corridor.
Well, Phil, that's an interesting question. I that was looked at during the legislative session about whether or not it would be the railroad for the in-state or and right now it's set up with Alaska Housing Finance to do the study they're doing now. The thing about the railroad corridor is it's not permitted currently for a pipeline, and that there is a permitted corridor already next to the oil pipeline for a gas pipeline. So the railroad may be an appropriate entity to do that, but I wouldn't necessarily tie it to their permitting requirements or permitting opportunities in the corridor running through Denali National Park.
Hmm. So you would figure with the gas line that the Yukon River would be a critical point.
Oh, it would be. It would be a great opportunity to when you cross the cross that river, you take the gas off as compressed natural gas, very economically, not liquefied, it's just compressed, put it on barges and ISO containers, move them up and down the river, drop the barges off like we do propane bottles at a barbecue. That's an exciting piece for me. But you know that you mentioned, Steve, the Governor Murkowski Stranded Gas Development Act, as far as how that was not popular. You know, that was a concept whereby the state would have a minority interest, perhaps 20%, and we would provide all these concessions on oil in order for them to continue to study a gas line. And that, I think, is what was soundly rejected. I think the frustration is that all we were doing is another study. We were doing another. It really didn't result in a gas line. It resulted in just additional studies. I think Alaskans are ready for us to step up and say, let's do what the government of Canada did in the 50s when they built the Trans-Canadian Gas Line. When they built that in the 50s to get gas from Alberta to Toronto because they just couldn't wait any longer, they owned it for one day. 24 hours is all they owned it, and TransCanada purchased it from them. That's how TransCanada got started with a government. And it was built by the private sector. It was intended to be operated by the private sector, and they sold it the very next day. So what I'm talking about is stop waiting, stop studying, stop trying to incentivize somebody to do something that they're not required to do. The North Slope producers have absolutely zero obligation to build a gas line, and we keep doing all these things and trying to incentivize. We'll give up $20 billion in oil revenues for 10 years is what Governor Parnell recently did when he vetoed Senate Bill 305. Stop trying to, after 32 years trying to run the play up the middle, let's put the ball in the air and let's go to work and just work with the marketplace, wring as much risk out of it as we can because the financial markets will want that done. They'll want to make sure that there are markets, long-term contract, take-or-pay contract in place before the first shovel full of dirt is dug. So it's not a build it and they'll come, build it and they'll ship. Absolutely not. That's not acceptable. The state may have to put in 20%. I'll be very upfront about that. $4, $5, $6 billion, of which we would get a return of about 12% on a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, a FERC return of about 12%. So that's not a bad return on that investment. What we're doing is we're investing in our future. We're bringing down the cost of energy and create these job opportunities. So a lot of people ask, well, gee, where are we going to get the gas? Well, we're going to get the gas on the North Slope, where it's re-injected every day, and the leases are clear, and BP has put in writing, and Exxon has testified many times during the AGEA process. They've said, if there's a reasonable expectation of profit, they will ship. That's what the leases require them to do. So it doesn't require them to build a pipeline. So the difference of going into a liquid trading hub in Alberta is that price jumps up and down all over the place. And so it's risking that. I mean, last year about this time, gas sold in Alberta for about $1. Well, the tariff of getting the gas to Alberta is about $4. So how's that going to work? But on an LNG project, you lock in on long-term take-or-pay contracts, fixed price, with a floor and a ceiling. It's called a collar. And that way you know what you're going to be paid for the gas. And so that's the way they do it all over the world. There's about 12 LNG projects on the drawing boards right now, all trying to go to the premium Asian market. Well, we've been shipping to the premium Asian market since October of 1969 out of Nikiski. So we've got the longest history of shipping to that market. So it's all about security of supply. You know, they absolutely love when I sat down in the boardroom of Tokyo Gas and Tokyo Electric, and I met with KOGAS. They said, we love the security supply from Alaska because you have the longest record of on-time, uninterrupted deliveries of any place in the world because you're a democracy or you have a contract. A contract means something. You have a constitution. So when we're entering into long-term contracts, by far we prefer to go with countries that have our form of government.
When you went to China with Wally Hickel, do you think we have a market there?
I think we do. We currently have an export license which allows us to take LNG from Valdez to Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. We certainly have a market in those three locations. Could China be added to that? I don't know. Probably so. I think that's a growing country that would and now that they're seem to be financially involved with our country in a significant way. I think they'd have some interest in products from our country. Part of the problem we have no exports. We have, finally we can, on the balance of trade payments, we can finally assist in that in some way.
That's I never heard that one before. And you're dead serious.
I am. And that's one thing that the administration has talked about is that we've, in the State of the State address, President Obama talked about we need to have more exports into the. He specifically talked about the Asian market, and so here we sit with a commodity that can go to the Asian market, and and you know, we absolutely should. The lower 48 is absolutely awash in gas and will be for the next 100 years, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. So there's no, there should not be any pushback from that.
Well, at what stage, if the state were to put forward this 20% you're talking about, where would it best be invested? Would it best be in the early stages? I mean, what AGEA tries to do is plant the incentives in the early stages in hopes that the later stages will unfold.
Well, look at it this way. Look, as if we were building a commercial office building or a condo project, you know, the state's portion goes in along with everybody else's portion that goes in. In other words, when the whole financing package is put together, the state would have to put in its 20% at that time. So everybody sort of comes to the table at the same time.
So it wouldn't be a phased thing.
No.
It's you get all the whole deal or set out right away.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to have from A to Z in order for it to be financed.
Bill Walker is our guest. He is running for governor, and I think you're getting some idea of where he stands. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. It's the email is talk@APRN.org, and it's a local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. And we have kind of allowed the gas line to dominate our discussions here. You did go off into education.
Well, and I'm happy to talk about other areas that I'm concerned as well. I'm concerned about on tourism. I come from a tourism background. We have had a significant downturn in tourism in Alaska, and in large part just because the whole world economy is not healthy. And tourism is sometimes the canary in the mine on that in some respects, because those are discretionary dollars that people say, well, are we going to make this trip to Alaska this year, or are we not? So My push is I'd like to see ways that, you know, the cruise ships have done a great job on you know, bringing tourists to Alaska. The ATIA is a state organization marketing arm, which has done an excellent job on marketing Alaska. I'm always looking for ways of getting more of those folks to come up here to sort of stay longer. They're already here. But the other piece of tourism, and I look at more from the small independent companies, not necessarily the mom and pop hotel motels, the rafting companies, the fishing guides, those people with the gift shops, etc. So I think we can do more on that. But there are things that have been done in the winter. Fairbanks is a good example. What they've done with Ice Alaska is phenomenal. I don't know if you've ever seen that, Steve, but it is worth a trip to Fairbanks in the middle of the winter. It will be a treat beyond treats for you to see. I've been up there twice, looking at Ice Alaska. Go at night if you can, because the lights that they have. But this ice carving is an Olympic event. I mean, they have 500 volunteers involved in this, and they bring in $20 million into their economy in the middle of the winter in Fairbanks as a result of this event. Is that, you know, it's timed. People come. I mean, it's an international event. There are teams from all over the world. They have hundreds of cameras on this for people. So people in China, in Japan, in Korea, in Mexico, and all around South Africa. I think I saw a team from there can watch this live as their team is doing this carving. And the intricate, my goodness, what they come up with is unbelievable. So there are many things that can be done in that regard.
It may actually be already happening. You know, I know our station in Talkeetna says that there were all these film crews there this climbing season.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it seems that reality TV has taken this vast interest in Alaska over the last few years for some reason. It seems we're going to get a lot of promotion out of that.
I think we are. And if we can turn that into people coming up and visiting us, and you know, tourism is a wonderful renewable resource, and one that, you know, we have to scramble a little bit more than some of the states, because, you know, to come to Alaska, it's not like just driving across the state line into a neighboring state. You really have to, you don't make a wrong turn on the turnpike and end up in Alaska. So we need to be more aggressive, I think, in getting getting Alaska's name out there. And I think there's ways we can do that.
You know, the ferry's gotten pretty expensive.
The ferry?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has. And but you know, the ferry system is one that I'm very interested in as well, because of our time 30 years in Valdez. The ferry system was an integral part of our business there, as far as making sure that operated sort of on time, and they did a great job. We didn't appreciate how much they impact our business until suddenly there was a blockade in in Canada some years ago, and we couldn't get some of our ferries out of there, and that really interrupted some of our commerce here in the state. So the ferry system is I've been through their facility in Ketchikan. I've been through the because they moved that from Governor Murkowski, I believe, moved that to Ketchikan from Juneau. I've been through the Ketchikan shipyard, and that's exciting because there we are making something. We're making ships. I mean, it's exciting to see that. I think we should do a better job in this state of spending our money locally as a state. We tend to export our dollars to acquire services and products outside that we could buy here. And part of the problem is that when we take federal dollars, and along with that comes, I used to say string, now I say chains, they require us to do certain things because we have federal dollars. We have to do it on certain bid requirements under the federal procurement act rather than our state procurement act. So I'm very disappointed that we've taken federal money on the new ferries to be built, which may or may not be able to be built in the Ketchikan shipyard because of that. So we just need to stop reaching out to the federal government for everything we need. And you know, we have to decide what we're going to be. You can't take the money and then say, you know, boy, we sure hate these restrictions. Well, some of those restrictions wouldn't be there if we didn't take the money. So,
Bill Walker is our guest. He's running for governor as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Operating a forklift is serious business, and operators are required to be properly trained and certified. The emotional and financial damage can be severe when a family member never comes home from work or comes home with a debilitating injury due to a forklift accident. Training information is available at 1-800-656-4972. Good, safe jobs are Alaska's future. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
It is Talk of Alaska, and Bill Walker is our guest. He's running for governor. He's running for the Republican nomination for governor, so it's a primary contest. And we're doing Talk of Alaska's on Tuesdays and Thursdays to accommodate all the people that are running for office. We'll go to Alex, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Alex, with Bill Walker.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question for Mr. Walker. As a hotel owner in Valdez, you'd be positioned to profit handsomely from construction of an LNG facility there. And that just happens to be your signature issue. Should voters be concerned about that potential conflict of interest?
Well, I have not had any ownership in a hotel in Valdez for about 25 years, I don't think. So that was back a while back. So we do have, just full disclosure, we do have a small gift store there, and I'm not sure that would be a big turning point for anybody. But you know, we do have a small gift store. But you know, and I'm also talking about, and I agree with Senator Stevens on this. He said in March of last year, he said, you know, we should get gas to Valdez, to Kenai, to Point McKenzie. Well, actually, I've added Point McKenzie, but I agree with that. I think it, you know, there's a spur line right away from Glen Allen over to the Mat-Su. You know, I'd hate to see that facility in Kenai go out of business and those jobs go away as well. So it's not about just Valdez. It's about, let's get gas to Alaska and let's get it to all locations where it can be exported and where it can be value added, makes sense. So it's not just one location. So it's all. But let me just mention briefly about the primary, Steve. You mentioned about that.
Yes.
We have an important date coming up on July 26th, actually, by which many have contacted me or our campaign and said, you know, what can we do to vote for you? What do we have to be registered?
Well, you have to not be a Democrat. That's one thing.
Or an independent. It's RUN. If you're registered as a Republican, undeclared, or nonpartisan, any one of those would be allowed. So some want to have some multi-generational folks, Democrats, have come to me and said, we're going to change our registration so we can vote for you.
And the deadline's coming up.
The deadline is the 26th of July to do that, and you can do that online, I'm told. And also, you can change back right after the primary, but you have to be 30 days beforehand. And of course, the primary is the 24th of August, but the 26th of July is a critical date by which to do that. And I know there's been many people have done that, so I would
think that there are people who might usually vote Democratic because they're in unions, mm-hmm. who would want to vote your way because of the in-state gas line and the jobs and all.
Well, it does come down to jobs, and I did receive the AFL-CIO endorsement, which is unusual, although Senator Ted Stevens has received that historically as well as Congressman Don Young. So I was pleased to receive that. I've received that because my position on jobs. I have a plan. I wouldn't do this without a plan. And so I get a fair amount of criticism of my plan, but at least I have a plan, I guess I'll put it that way. And I'm all about the jobs issue. I think that's absolutely critical.
Let's go to Gene. Joins the program from Fairbanks. Gene, you're on Talk of Alaska, Thursday edition with Bill Walker.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about the recent veto by Governor Parnell of the expansion of Denali Kid Care, and wondered where you stand on that issue.
Okay, let me be. Thanks, Gene, for that question. Because I am pro-life, I'm not in favor of government-funded abortion, and I understand his concerns on that issue, and I don't disagree with him on that issue. My issue on Denali Kid Care, I think we need to have a provision in place for a safety net for children. I have a strong passion for children because of our four children, our two grandchildren. My goal is to get as many people off of Denali Kid Care as possible through having good jobs, having an economy that's growing. So rather than adding to the number of people on Denali Kid Care, I want an economy that's going to minimize that number of people on Denali Kid Care. So I don't disagree with his position on right to life and as it was associated with that issue.
And so you would have vetoed what the legislature had provided in expanding the income guidelines, or would you do the same? You'd have pulled that?
I would have, yes.
Okay, well, thank you. Lost my vote.
Okay, very good. Well, I guess that's my position is I don't go out and tell people what I think they want to hear. I tell them what I'm made of and what's important to me. And I guess on that issue, I would have handled it differently. I mean, you could have seen that coming down the pike and handled it differently, perhaps. But I am what I am as far as right to life, and I don't modify that, and I'll be the same person when I'm sworn in as the day that I filed to run on September 28th, because that's just the way I am.
Bill Walker, we have one that came in by email here. We only got like about a minute and a half here, but you probably like this. How do we get to renewable? What is the government not doing now?
Oh, what we're doing now is, number one, is we're vetoing infrastructure funding for interties. Is one issue that I'm concerned about. We need to. It's time for us to spend some dollars on the infrastructure to get to the renewable. We need, if we have an opportunity, and we certainly would have the financial wherewithal with developing our resources off the North Slope of natural gas to be able to have the financial wherewithal to look at a very significant hydro project in this state. So I think the way we do it is we start looking at expending money on renewable and not necessarily in studies. My goodness, there's enough studies on that. It's actual infrastructure to do that. So my capital budget would have a very healthy portion of it would be based on infrastructure for renewables.
So you probably wouldn't support Parnell's veto of half of the renewable energy.
I absolutely would not. I think that's a mistake. You know, to veto that at the same time you push across $20 billion for the benefit of Exxon, BP, ConocoPhillips, and TransCanada. Nope, that's not what my priorities are. I'm sorry. I'm gonna go with the local folks first.
All right. Thanks for being with us today, Bill Walker.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve.
Coming up on the next Talk of Alaska on Tuesday will be Ralph Samuels. He's the bullet line guy. Dave Waldron on the controls. And it's Paige Corona and Patrick Yak on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender, and by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.